Negative thinking can destroy. We're going to talk about that. Negative thinking, if you look at it positively, can also create. Let's take a look at what I mean by that. And probably a good place to start would be to offer you a story. The ultimate human story. You know the story. We've heard it again and again. It's in every ounce of literature, whether it be in drama or whether it be children's literature. It doesn't matter what culture or what background you have, you've heard the story. It goes something like this. An ordinary person like you or me makes a decision. And the decision is to go on a quest, to go on a journey, to do something. Something that's going to make a difference. And in this ordinary journey, this person does extraordinary things and becomes a hero. How does it happen? Well, you or I, this ordinary person, set out on this journey. We made a decision. And along the way, if we're real lucky, what do? We meet a very wise man who gives us some magic words or weapons. And thus armed, we travel on to a fairy kingdom or an enchanted castle in some far-off realm. And in seeking to reclaim a kidnapped maiden or a priceless treasure or a holy grail, what do? We battle off the invaders. We fight off all the problems. On our quest, we encounter wonders beyond our description, as well as monsters of a thousand kinds. But armed with the pure heart and the wise man's power, we slay the dragon, we liberate the treasure, and we return home with the prize. That's humanity's favorite story. You can find it as the plot of tales and myths from every age and culture. Sometimes the hero's name is Lancelot. Other times it's Luke Skywalker. It's the basic plot of the Iliad and the Odyssey, of Dante's Divine Comedy, of Ramayana of the East, of Jack and the Beanstalk, of Raiders of the Lost Ark, of the game Dungeons and Dragons. The appeal, the special excellence of this basic story is that it can be appreciated on many levels, as a simple adventure story or as a description of a spiritual journey. Now tell me, haven't you had the dream? Haven't you dreamed of the person who makes the difference? Who helps everyone, who's loved by everyone, where you help to change the entire community, or your family, or your friends. I think we've all had dreams. The question is, where do they go? See, for most people, they had dreams when they were a kid. They dreamed of these kinds of things. They say, yeah, but that's stories. That's not real life. And I went out there in real life, and I got those magic words. I paid for them late at night on television. You know what? And those words came, and I went out and tried to buy that real estate for no money down. You know what? It didn't work. Those magic words didn't work. He wasn't such a wise man. Or the weapons weren't strong enough when people said no. I don't know what kind of story you have, but I know a lot of people had dreams, and they've got all kinds of reasons why when they went out on their journey, when they tried their quest, it didn't work. And a lot of them are legitimate. But you know what's interesting? A lot of people have dreamed and approached their dream over and over again, and each time failed to slay the dragon. Failed to come back and win the maiden's hand. Failed to come back and free their friends. And pretty soon they've given up. And giving up is the ultimate danger. The message of the power of positive thinking is a message in belief. It teaches us that we must be able, no matter what the environment, to focus on what we do have. To focus on how to turn things around. To focus on how to make things work. The message of the power of negative thinking is simple. Focus on what you don't have. Focus on how things are not how you want them to be. And certainly you will find yourself unarmed and facing a dragon that is ferocious, one that you know you cannot defend against. And whether the dragon eats you or not, you'll still feel the pain as if he had. What do I mean by this metaphor? Well, I got a question for you. Those who slay the dragon, those who free the maiden, those who come home to the joy and happiness that they dreamed of, what do they all have in common? What do all these ordinary people who become extraordinary by doing extraordinary things have in common? Well, one might say they were positive thinkers, without a doubt, and I would have to agree. But what does that mean? The bottom line is we read the stories of people who find out what resources they really have, because they're able to get themselves to be confident whether people are fearful. Really, what is the power of positive thinking? It's the power of faith. It's the ability to generate a feeling of certainty in yourself when nothing in the environment supports you. See, every great achiever I know, I don't care who it is, whether it be Lee Iacocca or my daughter Jolie, anyone who makes a difference, anyone who contributes, anyone who produces a quality of life, a result that is measurable, that other people aspire to, all these people have something in common. They're positive thinkers. You want to be a hero? Learn to create certainty in the face of fear. What is negative thinking? For most people, the power of negative thinking is the power to destroy. The power of negative thinking is really the ability to allow yourself to operate from fear instead of faith. And that is when your life falls apart. Out of fear, most people constantly focus on the worst that could happen. anticipate it in advance and thereby try to avoid even participating in something where they may not end up on top, where they may not achieve, where they may not be able to make things work the way they dream them. But see, the greatest way in the world to never achieve your dreams is to never take the first step. The greatest way in the world is to make sure you create nightmares about your dreams and allow those nightmares, your fears, to slowly eat away, to cut away at your courage, your power, your decision, your ability to move forward. And I got to tell you, I think most people in our society have learned to become negative thinkers. For most people, they've given up on their dreams. The kingdom they were seeking is too far away now. And the land they were pursuing is far beneath the waves, a place they'll never be able to reach. It's too deep. It's too far. And you know why people have taken this attitude? It's not because they don't care. It's not because they don't want to dream. It's because so many people have had dreams, and they've tried, and they've tried, and they've tried, and they've quote-unquote failed in their mind to achieve. And so, you know, there's something interesting about the human brain, and that is that the human brain is always working hard to avoid what? Pain. And it's always trying to gain what? Pleasure. Now, after failure, trying and trying and trying, and it not working and not working and not working, what some people link up is, boy, getting excited, really going for it, equals pain, so I better not even try. I better stay right where I am, because at least I know how to deal with that. And what happens is we have extraordinary people that settle for mediocre lives. So you don't want to fall in that trap. And it's so easy, isn't it? Haven't you failed there at least some point in your life where you felt so jaded and so frustrated and you tried so hard and you gave your all and it still didn't work that you felt like, why even try? I certainly know I have. That's where I was about 6.5, 7 years ago. All because I felt like, man, I gave my all and this is the reward? Why even try? Why even do this? I began to adopt the power of negative thinking, the power to destroy my life, and it didn't take long. It took me about 120 days to destroy everything I'd worked for 4 years to create. It doesn't take long when you indulge in that practice. It only takes a little bit of poison to kill somebody. You don't need to drink 6 gallons of strychnine just to sip and it's over. We got to make sure that every day we stand guard in our minds and make sure we're directing our minds rather than just falling for whatever is dumped in it by the environment around us. It's critical. Because what we think about daily is what's determining how we feel, what actions we take, and therefore each day what we think about is shaping our destiny. And you know what's scary? Sometimes the poison is offered by a friend. I think it was said best by my good friend and one of my original teachers, a man named Jim Rohn. If you ever get a chance to hear Jim, I hope you'll take the time to go listen to him speak. But Jim used to have a great thing. He said to me, he said, Tony, you know something? Every day you got to watch your mind. You got to watch what's getting in there. And watch who you surround yourself with because friends can poison you. I thought, that's kind of harsh. He said, but look, Tony, he said, look, if you got a cup of coffee here, and he said, your worst enemy comes by and puts some sugar in your coffee when you're not looking, what's going to happen? I said, well, I don't drink coffee, but if I did, I guess it'd be pretty sweet coffee. He said, that's right. He said, what if your best friend, even by accident, drops a little bit of poison in your coffee? I said, I'd be dead. He said, that's right. Lesson one, watch your coffee. Right? And he said, lesson two, make sure when you're watching that coffee that you put in it what you want. You don't let other people do it for you. We've got to watch our minds. And I'll tell you what, if we don't, you got to realize that gravity is constant. If you don't every single day try to put something positive in your mind, something that's going to build, something that's going to help you to construct a greater quality of life, if you don't do that consciously, what will the news provide for you? What will the environment around provide for you? Gravity is constant. Negativity is constant. We must resist it in order to have the muscle and the will to shape the quality of our lives. Hey, what are the consequences, though, of being negative? What are the consequences of looking for what's wrong instead of what's right? The consequences are the destruction of your dreams. The consequences are giving up on everything you could possibly want in your life. And the scary part is so many people in our society have been conditioned to think this way that I think it's affecting the structure and quality of life in America. That might be a pretty big claim to make, but think about it sincerely. As long as people believe that dreaming equals pain, that their future is the same as their past, then that's exactly what will be true in their life. Pretty soon what happens is it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. We get what we look for. If you want to find something dirty in your room, look around. You can find it. You want to find a problem in yourself, you'll find it. You want to find a problem in somebody you care about, you'll find it. It's not hard. Ask and you shall receive. Seek and you shall find. If you look for the bad, you'll get more of it. You look for the good, you'll have that too. But we've got to be careful about the conditioning. But again, what's made us as a society become so conditioned to the negative? Besides the media, what else is there? Well, we hear in the media, and we've been shaped by a series of negative references, painful experiences that have taught us, boy, if you really believe in someone, if you got a hero, if you believe in your country or a key person, you're going to have your beliefs shattered, your emotions destroyed. All that you've invested will not come back to you. You will lose it all. So quickly protect yourself. Don't get too excited. Don't get too happy. Don't expect too much. In fact, the lesson seems to be today expect very little, and that way you won't be disappointed. Be, quote-unquote, realistic, which is nothing but a fancy word for saying be negative. Look for what's wrong. Try to find something wrong in advance. It's one of the most destructive forces that can enter our lives. But why are we that way? Well, look at the last 30 years. John F. Kennedy was assassinated. Then Martin Luther King, then Bobby Kennedy. Progress towards limiting discrimination and racial bigotry became painfully slow compared to what we expected. We went through the scourge of Vietnam, the Watergate scandal, Jim Jones. Then in the 70s, the hostages were taken to Iran. We had double-digit inflation, growing unemployment. And then we got to sit down in an oil crisis, so we sat for miles waiting to get gasoline. Right at the peak of the negativity, right when people just about given up, something interesting happened. We threw our pendulum one way, and somehow we had tried to balance it. And one way we may have tried to balance it is we hired a guy. We recruited a guy. We voted him in. His name was Ronald Reagan. And while Reagan certainly wasn't the source of the shift, he certainly became one element in making us look at life in another way. And I think we put him in that position because we needed him at that time. Ronald Reagan was an optimist. Ronald Reagan was a positive thinker. Ronald Reagan had references throughout his life that, hey, looking for what's wrong is not going to do it. I got to find out what's right and amplify what's right. What doesn't work, I just need to get rid of it as quickly as possible. And he came from that simple approach, and he changed the way a lot of Americans looked at themselves. He changed the way we looked at ourselves as a nation. The day that he was inaugurated, they released the hostages from Iran. And there was a new surge of optimism and possibility. We began the best economic run in our history, and patriotism was once again fashionable. But there was still big trouble in El Salvador and in Nicaragua, and then came the Iran-Contra affair. Noriega in Panama, the brutal murder of drug agent Enrique Camarena, the drug problem growing wild, now even reaching the grade school children. Then there was corruption in the Pentagon, in HUD, Ivan Boesky's of the world, the savings and loan crisis, the budget deficit itself, scandals with television evangelists like Jim Baker and Jimmy Swaggart. See, after a decade of things like that, those kinds of experience, a lot of people say, why even try? If you believe in anything, if you put yourself on the line, if you try and learn something from someone, you have somebody who's a hero, that hero's just going to disappoint you. You better not have any role models because they're just going to hurt you. Make sure you pick an anti-hero. That's the only way to really succeed. And we have articles like in USA Today. I picked up one that I saved the other day. It was from November 27, 1989. You know what they said about the 80s? Here's the opening paragraph. The 80s were the years of excess. We swaggered through our portals and grabbed as much as we could as fast as we could. We were greedy and gluttonous. And as long as we wore starched shirts, we could belch at the dinner table. Listen to the kind of paragraph. And it goes on and on and on about how horrible people were in the 80s. Leaves out a few things, doesn't it? Leaves out things like during the 80s is when we had times when people witnessed things like Band-Aid, Farm Aid, Hands Across America, We Are the World, where children in the South Bronx scraped together their pennies so they could feed children who were starving to death in Africa. It was a terrible time. At the time when some of the great role models in our nation were people like Bill Cosby, a little different from the color discrimination of the past. Everything in our society has become stronger. We had our greatest run in economic history, and yes, we've had our worst budgets, but there are other things that we've learned, other resources we have. So in order to be negative, we have to generalize. We have to look at what doesn't work. We have to focus on that enough till that becomes real. What is the truth about the 80s? The truth about the 80s is simple. It's whatever you focus on. The reality is you can walk into a room with a camera and a party, and if you focus on the corner of the room where people are fighting, where things are horrible, where people are mean, boy, that was one mean party. But if you go in that exact same room and you look through that camera, but you focus the camera on the opposite end of the room where everybody's having a great time, people are loving and contributing, you're going to say, what a wonderful party. The same is true of your life. The same is true of the nation as a whole. Do I say we should become naive and just trust blindly? No. What I suggest is we have balance, that we use the power of positive thinking and the power of negative thinking. You say, you keep alluding to that, Tony. What does that mean? Here's what I mean. Here's how we deal with our life in a way that I think is intelligent and works. Step number one in life, see life as it is. And I say see life as it is, here's what I mean. See as it really is. Don't make it worse than it is and don't make it better than it is. Just see things as they are. To the best of your ability, it's still not going to be accurate. But look at things. You got to notice where you are. But don't make it worse than it is because all that does is make you feel overwhelmed and want to give up. Step two, see it better than it is. Use the power of positive thinking. That is, develop a vision in your mind of how you want things to be. Get clear about what your goals are. Get clear about what that dream is. Get real specific. And with that precision, with that power, with that vision, when things get tough, you can look at that vision and you'll know what you're going for. It'll pull you through the tough times. And step three, make it like you see it. Take your world from where it is and make it like the vision you have. You can't get stuck on the past. You can't get stuck on what used to be done to you or someone used to disappoint you. That's a great way to make sure you never go for it. Classic example, lady in one of my seminars one time. She raised her hand, I asked people, what do you want? She goes, well, I'd like to be closer to my husband. I used the precision model. I said to her, well, what prevents you from being more close to him? She goes, well, I don't know. I said, well, if you did know, what would you say? She said, well, you know, I'd like to be closer to him, but, you know, he just never seems to be close to me. I said, ma'am, what would you need to do to be closer to him? She goes, well, I don't know. I guess I'd have to just treat him better. I said, well, why don't you do that? She goes, well, I don't know, because if I treat him better, he may not treat me better. If I'm really loving to him and I give my all, he may not give his all. I said, so great, ma'am, if you never give 100% to your husband, 1,000% of your commitment, of your love, why should he ever give 1,000% to you? She goes, well, I'll meet him halfway. It'll never happen. See, the way to make a relationship work is not to meet somebody halfway. You got to give 1,000%. If you give 1,000%, you're creating the place for them to have 1,000%. Out of her fear that he may reject her or that she may give her all and he may leave her anyway, she doesn't give him enough to make him want to stay. And the relationship will end. Our fears, whatever we focus on, we get. We got to break out of that. See it as it is. See it better than it is. Make it the way you want it. Let me give you 5 steps to really utilizing the power of positive thinking, even though I said this is about negative thinking. And then let me show you how to use negative thinking in an assignment. How to make negative thinking something that's useful for you. So step number one, decide to develop the habit right now, the habit of focusing on what's right in your world instead of what's wrong, the habit of focusing on what you do have instead of what you don't have in a situation. And as basic as that is, and as well as you know it, you've got to make it a habit, because those habits form the chain of your ultimate character, of who you become and how you end up living your life. We've got to condition ourselves, because if we don't, we'll go back to the automatic state that most people live in today's society. The way to develop the habit is to go on a mental diet. I did this several years ago. As positive as I was, and I was going through unbelievable pain at the time. I'd had some major disappointments, some frustrations. I felt like I'd given it all. But what turned me around is one day I picked up this book called The 7-Day Mental Diet. It was a little tiny little booklet. And all the booklet really did was, for about 12 of the 14 pages, it challenged me to really see if I could really truly, for 7 days, live my life without one negative thought. And it kept saying throughout the book, now don't just say, yeah, I can do it, and don't just say, I'm going to do it. Think for a while before you commit to this. Don't actually commit unless you're really going to do it for 7 straight days, no matter what. It doesn't mean you don't have a negative thought. It just means that if you have a negative thought, you don't speak it. You set it aside. You forget about it. Or you replace it. If you say something negative, you go, erase. What I really mean is this. Or you say, that's not what I mean. Here's what I mean is this. And you immediately focus on something good. It's not that nothing negative ever comes out. It's that you immediately do not allow yourself to hold a negative feeling, a negative thought for 7 straight days, day and night. Even when it gets tough. Even when somebody disappoints you. Even when you get frustrated. Even when you give your all and it still turns up lousy. Listen, if all I did was rant and rave on this tape and you didn't listen to anything else I said, but you took on this 7-day challenge, you can't believe what it'll do to your life. Now, I got to tell you, when I first read the book, I thought, wait a second, being positive isn't going to change my life. I got to deal with the real problems around me, those real challenges that are out there. I don't want to just be positive. Somebody says, how's it going? I go, oh, I'm doing great. And they go, why? You go, I don't know, but I just feel good. I don't want to be that way. I want to be real. I want to be on top of things. But you know what? I thought, wait a second. I can be positive about solutions. I can still notice that there's some challenges out there without being negative about it. I can look at the challenges and say, okay, here's what's good about this. Here's how we can use this. Here's how we can turn this thing around. And continue to focus on that. So I took on the challenge for 7 days, changed my life. Now, by the way, one of the keys is you have to have 7 straight days of being absolutely positive. Not one negative thought, not one negative expression that you hold on to. Got to let go of it immediately. If you do not do this, if you're 3 days into it and you do well, and then you have a bunch of negativity, you got to start over. And you know what? After you go about 4, 5, 6 days in a row doing really well, something major negative is going to happen. How's that for some positive programming? But what it is a test to see how committed you really are. I'll tell you something, after 7 days, you feel like a different person. People around you respond to you like you're different as well. All you want to do is establish the habit of noticing what you do have instead of what you don't have. Noticing what's great about a situation versus what's not great. Focusing on solution instead of problems. That's what changes your life. Here's key number two. Instead of judging yourself and others, decide, remember these are decisions, decide right now to become curious instead of judgmental. But remember, when you find fault in other people, when you start noticing constantly how they've wronged you, how this person is not good enough, or they're too egotistical, they're too proud, or they don't really care about people, as soon as you start judging other people, you just got to remember something. If you start judging other people, you're going to also start judging yourself intensely. If you're angry at other people, there's a very good chance you're angry at yourself as well. Maybe you need to perceive more and judge less. Maybe instead of finding fault with other people, without really thinking about what they've gone through to be where they are this day, maybe we can get really curious about what's making this person be in the state they're in, or what's the motivation behind this person's anger. For example, a lot of times we think somebody's being negative or angry or we're frustrated with them, but we never bother to find out what's really going on. I know myself, I was at a party recently, and I fell prey to this. There was a woman who came to the party. Everybody behind her back was saying, how unbelievably egotistical this woman is, how negative she was. But you know what? I sat next to her at dinner time, and I got a chance to really find out who she was. I got curious about her. And I began to find out about all the pain she'd been through in her life. When I realized was this woman was just barely hanging on to her life. She just needed to know that people cared. But she was so afraid of being rejected that she put out this ego because she didn't want someone to reject her. So she figured she'd reject them first. And I got a chance to really know her, and she was a wonderful person. I'll tell you something else that we've got to be careful of that ties in with this, of our being judgmental. Out of our fear of having heroes in our society today, we seem to try and consume them and destroy them as quick as we can. We try to find something that's wrong with our heroes because, boy, we don't want another Jim Jones. We don't want another Jim Baker. Remember, we got to judge less, perceive more. We got to get curious. Instead of living in a society where we're so afraid to believe in anything or anyone that we believe in nothing at all, and we lose our power of positive thinking. We try to protect ourselves from things we maybe not even need to protect ourselves from. Or we live in a society where we try and destroy our heroes, where we take somebody like Barbara Walters, incredible broadcaster, a woman of incredible integrity, who gets nailed by one person in a book, and it's in every newspaper across the land, how she probably stomped on people to get where she was. That's absurd. Or Martin Luther King, after he's passed on, somebody comes back and stomps all over his career and his reputation. Is that the society we want to live in? Any person who takes glee in watching another person's pain will experience plenty of pain themselves. Remember the quote, he was without sin, let him cast the first stone. The bottom line is, if you go looking for brown, you're going to find it anywhere you look for it, in others or yourself. Free yourself from the disease of making others wrong, and you'll free yourself from the disease of making yourself wrong. You have a lot more energy to create solution instead of problems. It's part of the power of positive thinking instead of falling for the destructive power of negative thinking. If you want to get curious, just ask yourself, what do I like about this person? Wonder what's going on with this person that would make them feel this way. How could I help this person? As you ask these kinds of questions, you may learn something about how human beings operate, about their motivations, maybe even some things about how to support yourself as you try to support others. Remember, get curious instead of judgmental. Here's key number 3. If you really want to develop the power of positive thinking as a habit, as a lifestyle, as a strategy for success, then decide right now to find something to appreciate from any seemingly negative person or situation. And develop the habit of giving compliments. See, if you really want to have some more positive feelings in your life, you got to keep focusing on what's right. You got to get curious. And most importantly, you got to find something to appreciate even in the tough times. Because in reality, as we've talked about so often before, the toughest times in your life sometimes provide you with the real resources to change your life. So what we've got to do is find something to appreciate. Not someday when things work out. We got to appreciate where we are right now. And this is something I talked to my daughter Jolie about today. Because she's in an experience today where I thought, well, gosh, she's not being very positive. And I'm going to talk about positive thinking. Because she came in to see me and she's feeling really sad. She's feeling really down, feeling really frustrated. And you know what her problem is? Her problem is she tried out and won the right to be amongst 3 girls who dance in the Electric Light Parade at Disneyland. And that was about 3 or 4 months ago. She's been going there after school every day, driving from San Diego up to Anaheim, burning herself into the ground, getting up and going to school to be a straight-A student still, and trying to visit with her family and her boyfriend. And she found herself maxing out. Now think about her problem. Her problem is that she gets to be at Disneyland and fulfill a childhood fantasy. Her problem is that she loves her family and wants to be with them as well. Her problem is she loves to be at school and really do that. Her problem is she has so much abundance that she has to figure out how to get it all in one day, and she can't do it. And she's physically burning out. That's her problem. And you know what? She says, gosh, I want to be home. I want to be with you guys and all these things. I don't want to miss out on all this great time we have together. I want to be with you guys. I said, but honey, look what you're doing. She goes, yeah, I don't want to miss out on Disneyland either. I don't want to miss out on my career and what I'm doing and what's going on. What's the problem? The problem is she's finding out what's negative in both situations. She's focusing on what she doesn't have instead of what she does have. Now, I could be negative about that and say, gosh, be more positive. But you know what? In reality, I realized being negative in this situation may not be bad. What do I mean? I don't mean being negative. I mean being intelligent. I mean being critical in your thinking. Seeing what you don't have is sometimes useful too. This is what I promised you in terms of the power of negative thinking. Here's how negative thinking can be useful. I sat down with her and I said, honey, I said, let's look at the advantages and disadvantages of both. Let's not just be positive. Let's look at it. The whole thing is positive. Let's know that no matter what you choose, you've won. You have what most people dream about. But for a moment, let's be a little bit critical. What do you love about Disneyland? What's great about it? What is it giving you? And let's ask the question that maybe we don't ask very times when we're just being purely positive. What isn't it giving you? What are you afraid about? What are you missing by being there? What's great about being at home more? What's great about those things? What's not great about that? Be honest. If you were there, what might happen that's not good? What might you miss out on? And you know what? By getting her to use both positive and negative thinking, or to be more accurate, positive thinking and some critical thinking, looking at what isn't there for the moment, what she is missing out on, and allowing that pain to motivate her, she was able to clarify what's most important in her life and what's the best way to do that. And she came up with a plan that totally empowered her. After a couple hours of conversation and fun, she looks better than she has in about 6 months because she's finally resolved what's most important. And sometimes just being positive and keeping a stiff upper lip isn't enough. Sometimes you got to stop and say, I am positive. I'm going to approach this from a positive way. I'm going to stay in a positive state. But I'm going to ask some questions some people may think of as negative, which is, what isn't working? Because if you're not willing to look at what isn't working, you can get yourself in trouble. So when I say number three is, develop the habit of noticing something you can appreciate out of the situation, even something that seems to be negative. What I mean by that is, find out what's working, but also appreciate what isn't working. Appreciate it enough that maybe it creates enough pain for you to want to make a change. Hey, being purely positive all the time is not the ultimate solution. Being purely positive 98% of the time, to me, is the solution. Remember our steps. Number one, you're going to focus on how it really is. And that's what we did today. Jolie and I sat down and said, let's see how it really is. And let's not just be positive. Let's stop for a second. How is it really? What's good? What isn't good? What's great? What isn't great in this context? Everything is great, but comparatively, what's great? What's not in both situations? Now, how do you really want it? And she decided how she wanted it. Now, what are we going to do to make that happen? And she began to take actions that have changed her life. Probably will affect the direction of her life, maybe even her career. And she feels joyous and excited because she went through the steps. That's the balance between positive and negative thinking. But one thing you got to remember, you're going to spend most of your time being positive. Once you see how it is, that's it. Decide what you want and make it happen. Don't keep going back and saying, oh yeah, but it's not working. See, balance doesn't mean you spend 50% of your time positive and 50% of your time negative. Remember, balance on a human scale is a little different. Negative experiences are dense, and it doesn't take a lot of those focuses of negative to weigh a lot in your life. Make sure your focus is primarily positive, but at times, at special times that you designate, you're going to say, hey, what isn't working? And allow that pain to drive you to do something that's very positive. That'll change your life. Here's key number four. Decide not to be perfect. You say, what? I said, decide not to be perfect. One way to make sure you're negative is always trying to be perfect. Because you know what? You're always going to notice you're not, because you're this thing called a human being. When I talk to my daughter, Jolie, I mean, this girl works so hard to be perfect. Everybody seems to love her. She's a straight-A student. She wants to be the very best at school. She wants to be the very best at home. She wants to be the very best at Disney. She wants to be the best at everything. And I'm trying to be the best constantly. In the past, she always noticed what wasn't perfect, and that created pain. So you can't do that. You're going to screw up. You're going to be negative. Things are going to happen where you don't follow through on what you know. You're going to make poor decisions. You're going to say things you shouldn't say, do things you shouldn't do, mess up like you shouldn't mess up. But you know what? When that happens, instead of being negative and beating yourself up and saying, boy, here's another example of me sabotaging myself, decide what you do want. And say, you know, I'm not perfect, but I am good. And what makes me good and what makes me great and what can make me excellent is as soon as I notice I'm not on track, I correct it. And I get better. Your goal each day is to get better, not to be perfect. And that's all anyone can ask of you. If every day you really try and contribute more, be more, and do more than you were slightly the day before, that's all anybody can ask. And if you know you're going to screw up and you don't make it a catastrophe, it's easier to bounce right back up. See, the only way you fail is if you quit. But if you learn something and you expand from it and you make some new decisions that enhance your life and the people you care about, then there is no failure. Don't try to be perfect because you'll never succeed. And here's the final one, key number five. Decide to develop the habit of using the F word, faith. Make sure that you're in the position of utilizing the tool that really positive thinking is about. Positive thinking, I've said it over and over again, really is just the power to believe. And as you believe, so is it done unto you. As you believe, so it's created. You need to make certain that you create that certainty inside yourself. And you know what? You and I both know there are going to be times when it looks grim. And the only power you really have is that power to have faith. To step forth and say, I'm going to put myself on the line. I'm going to have the courage to overcome my fears and to take action, even though it may not work out. Even though I may put out my love and it may not be reciprocated, I'm still going to put myself on the line. Because if I don't, that's the only way I can fail. See, without faith, nothing exists. And remember one more thing. No matter how bad it seems, this too will pass. That you've made it this far. You've been through tough times. Times you didn't think you could pull it off. And you've made it. If you've made it through all the challenges of your past and your life still works, you still seem to be somewhat happy, you're still standing, as they say, then gosh darn it, you're successful. And you can make it through this too. It's the thing that'll pull you through. Faith is still the power. It's your ultimate power. You know, for more than 14 years now, I've passionately pursued profound knowledge, those specific ideas, strategies, beliefs, and distinctions that empower us, once we really understand them, to immediately increase the quality of our lives. And in following this path, I've had the privilege to meet, to interview, and many times become very good friends with some of the most successful people in our modern culture. From legends like international money manager John Templeton or Wall Street market forecaster Robert Prechter, to some of the psychological and physiological masters, those people like Norman Cousins, Dr. Deepak Chopra, Dr. Bernie Siegel, some of the emotional coaches that I've met along the way, people like Dr. Leo Biscaglia, the love doctor, if you will, or Captain Jerry Coffey, the man who spent 7 years in solitary confinement in Vietnam and how he managed himself and turned himself around, whether it's in business or movies or music. People like a Peter Guber, these people never cease to amaze me with their ability to take a vision and make it real in spite of a lack of support from virtually everybody around them. No one jumped to support Bernie Siegel when he started talking about what human emotions could do to change the immune system, or Norman Cousins for that matter. When Robert Prechter first started talking in the 1970s about a Dow that would be at 3,000, everybody thought he was crazy. You know something, if you read a daily newspaper right now or you watch a television news show, you could easily be convinced by all the negative information and dispiriting stories that the philosophies that made these men and women's lives successful were fads of a time that's really past. That today, such an approach would fall short. After all, today with budget deficits, the imbalance of trade, the Japanese dominance overseas, one of the longest recessions in recent memory, the consumer's lack of confidence, the worst it's been in years. You know, most people are right now really preparing themselves for long-term bad times. I mean, with cover stories on Newsweek like The Lost American Dream and The Curse of Self-Esteem, and with daily talk shows covering such profound subjects as women who don't let their men leave the house or being jealous of your mother, it'd be easy to buy into the philosophy and actually fall into the trap of feeling certain that the good times have really passed and the future is indeed bleak. Why would people begin to believe this? Because, hey, our experience of reality can be depicted in a simple formula I wrote down the other day in my journal. I times F equals PR. Information times your focus equals your personal reality. Whatever information you're feeding your mind on a daily basis and you focus upon consistently, you're going to experience as being what life is really about. I look at some of these shows and I ask myself, where do they get these people? But for some people, that's their experience of life. That's their experience of reality. I recently read an article where one media watchdog group described that 96% of all information about our economy that's been communicated through the public mass media in the last 6 months has been negative in nature. They said even when the statistics are positive, the anecdotes the media uses are negative, i.e., unemployment went down today, but that's not going to help John Smith, who can't find a job and never will. Think about it. Think about the frame of reference that that creates for people in our society who are getting most of their information directly from a medium, which is not designing the best way to condition your mind to produce quality results. And the challenge is that the average American now watches television 7 hours a day. That is the national average. Think of the quality of information that they're trying to build a quality life out of. We've all heard the term, we've heard it a million times, garbage in, garbage out. And by the way, if they're not sitting there in front of the television set, they get to read the newspaper. And you know what? Papers have to generalize. They have to simplify. In order to take something complex and make it understandable in a small amount of space, it's got to be generalized. It's got to be simplified. Plus, we have to remember that news has to sell. It is a business in this country. And as a result, what sells more? Certainly, pain-oriented news sells more because it's a necessity for us to know more about it. I was talking to economist Paul Pilser, the author of Unlimited Wealth, recently, and Paul and I were chatting. I said, why is it that we have this unbelievably insane negative focus? And he said, well, there's a lot of possibilities, and we both talked about some of Robert Prechter's work about how moods in our country and around the world go through cycles like seasons. But he said, you know, the other thing, Tony, is you got to realize that bad news sells. I said, well, I've heard people say that before, but how do you explain that to people? I mean, I have a tough time with it. He said, well, the reality is simple. If you and I are walking down the street here and we look at a newspaper and at the top of it it says, this weekend, beautiful and sunny, we look at each other and smile and keep walking. Say, oh, that's great. If we walk by and we see big storm coming, suddenly, guess what? We stop to read and buy the newspaper so we can understand more. And so inherently, news organizations are not bad or wrong. They're only feeding the public what the public responds to. It's our own challenge. But the point of the matter is, if we don't consciously create a plan on how to feed our mind with information that can help us to make intelligent choices to increase the quality of our lives, then we only have ourselves to blame. And the challenge, though, is it's so easy to get seduced because everywhere you turn these days, somebody's got a bleaker picture to paint for you about what our future is going to be. But you know what? You got to remember that naysaying is not new. As long as there have been people with visions, there have been dozens lined up to stifle them. I don't care if it's somebody as far back as a Columbus or a Copernicus. And by the way, some of them just didn't want to stifle them. They wanted to kill them. If they disagreed with their viewpoints and they felt strong enough about it, they were physically attacked. Or some people just ridiculed. Somebody like Walt Disney. Here's a guy who was told by virtually every person he spoke to that his idea was absolutely ridiculous, that no one would go for it. In fact, he was turned down by more than 302 bankers before he finally got someone to help him to fund his vision. Stop for a second and just imagine the loss that millions of children, and for that matter, adults, would have around the world if Disney had been a, quote, reasonable man and accepted other people's limiting views of his vision. You know, Peter Guber is one of the people I respect most in the world. He's the chairman of the board of Sony Entertainment. And you know what? He told me a long time ago about when he was first making the movie Rain Man. He was told that, you know, no movie about some guy and his brother traveling across the country in a car is ever going to make it. You got to have action. In fact, four directors, including Steven Spielberg, quit the project. Many of them wanted to put all the sex and violence in it. And Peter said, absolutely not. This is a movie about a relationship. It's about the human spirit. He was totally unrelenting. He told everybody that it would win an Academy Award. And you know what? It won four. But, you know, often the people that are bent on convincing you that you can't live your dream, they're really well-meaning. They don't want to see you get your hopes up only to see them dashed. After all, they're basing their views on reality, right? The challenge is that a person's reality is completely controlled by the information that you have available to you and that you focus upon. Yet those people who succeed in our society are those rare individuals who don't merely swallow the information that's fed to them, but instead they pursue quality information that will nourish their lives. They learn to trust their instincts. You know, so often we hear we live in an information age, but it's not only the fact that information is available to us that shapes our lives, but which information we focus on. That's what determines how we feel and what we do. See, when millions of people learned that Hong Kong would soon revert to Chinese rule, the majority of people began to focus on their potential for loss, and what'd they do? They began to flee, and they took all their capital with them. By contrast, John Templeton had the same information, except he decided to focus instead on what was the potential for profit. He began to ask what companies the Chinese would need regardless of the environment. And you know what he did? He bought stocks from all the fleeing masses for pennies of their true value. What everyone else perceived to be a bad time, he perceived to be a phenomenally good time. It was a time of tremendous opportunity. And you know what? When all of a sudden people stopped fleeing and they began to think, well, maybe this is going to work out okay, and they started buying stocks again, sure enough, the emotional pendulum flew back. All of a sudden people became extremely optimistic again, and John and his clients were rewarded for their immensely profitable decisions. They didn't go with the flow. They saw crisis as opportunity. In fact, in Chinese, you may know, the word crisis is composed of two characters. One of those represents danger, and the other one represents opportunity. So if there's anything that's evident at all, it's that not only are those who are succeeding creating their own path, challenging the traditional views of what is possible, but it's also evident that the people who follow conventional wisdom, the path of the crowd, as it may be called, those who accept the norms, usually suffer. not only do they suffer financially and emotionally, but I think they suffer at the deepest level of their psyche. They continually have to experience the mediocre, and they have to settle for an average existence with the unfathomable pain that comes with never touching one's true purpose or destiny. There is a price for going with the flow, and that price is the pain of giving up your dreams and taking the fall that those who fail to think for themselves must inevitably experience. Ultimately, how we evaluate what things mean and what we must do determines who we become and what we create and what we experience. You know, recently I did a seminar in Toronto, a one-day business seminar, and I asked a group of about 3,000 successful business people, you know, how many of you here have wildly successful lives? Lives you're incredibly proud of and you feel profoundly grateful for. You know something? In a room of 3,000 people, less than a dozen people raised their hands. Now, the truth of the matter is, many of these people are more successful in business this year than they were in previous years. In fact, I'd been there only a year and a half ago, and when I asked the same question, hundreds of people had raised their hands. What was different? I think the difference was that they had begun to filter their lives through the barrage of media that's taught them to expect the worst, that the future is going to be dim, that there's little hope for change, and that if they're doing okay right now, it's not going to last, and that intelligent people have good reason to despair. Yet when I asked the same people to imagine visiting Russia, where they could observe men and women standing in line for hours merely to buy a loaf of bread that costs three times more than they ever thought they could afford, maybe even after standing there for that long, they don't even get the bread. Maybe they're out of it after spending a day. Or you live in a nation where there's no certainty about your government's stability even, or what the future could possibly hold. I then asked them again, how many of you feel like you have an incredibly successful life you're grateful for and proud of? Suddenly 3,000 hands are raised to affirm their incredible levels of success. And when I described to them some of the people that we had at our mastery program who shared their lives, or a young man I recently found out about who had cancer, had his body amputated from the waist down, a man who now walks on his hands, sometimes draping pants over the emptiness below him. Suddenly when I talked to the people now, the whole room began to realize, hey, they have no problems. That they're bad times or may really be good times after all. See, of all the things I've learned in my life, and out of all the profound advice I've had the privilege to receive, I'm sure some of the most important was that there's one thing you must do each day, it's to stand guard at the door of your mind. For whatever meanings you allow to enter it will take root, and from those seeds your tomorrows are going to grow. See, what does this really mean? Simply, it takes years to build something of value. And yet it can be destroyed in minutes if you allow yourself to be influenced by those uneducated individuals that have no idea the power or the reality that human vision and will carry. So clearly there are two paths. That of following the crowd, which clearly leads to destruction, pain, frustration. Standard education clearly gets the standard results. Thinking like the masses is a great way to make sure you never live your dream. And those who have the ability to go against the crowd, go against the general flow, are the people we often see as the geniuses. Again, whether it's the Columbus or the Copernicus or the Templetons or the Goobers, these are people that go completely against what others have thought, and that's why they've succeeded. Success is found in that hidden area that most people won't question, they won't look at. And the only way to change the quality of our lives then is to be willing to put ourselves out there and do something different. But why is this so difficult for us? See, some people are always talking about how they're doing things different, but they're not really doing things different. They're doing things like all their friends who are trying to do things different. They're modeling their friends. They're not really going with what they believe is right. They're not trusting their instincts. And one of the challenges and one of the reasons is we live in a society with so much uncertainty right now. It's increasing every day because, again, what's the information that's being fed to everyone? What are they constantly focusing on? Things that make them uncertain. They're looking to the past for answers. And the present is very different than the way it was in the past. People are not sure what to do. And there is a psychological principle that unless you understand it, you will be controlled by it. And that principle of human influence is known as social proof. Social proof is the single most potent way of influencing human behavior cross-culturally. I don't care if you're talking about in China, if you're talking about somebody who's living in the rainforest, or if you're talking to somebody living in L.A., they all are influenced by social proof. Social proof simply means that when human beings are not sure, when they're uncertain about what should be done or what something means, they inevitably look to others to see how to feel and what to do about certain situations. It's part of how we always learn. We've learned by modeling. The belief behind social proof is that if enough people believe something or if enough people do something, then it must be right. But no greater lie was ever told. That is not accurate. How many things can you think of that lots of people used to promote and do that you can see now are destructive? Hey, listen, one out of every three people in our country die of cancer, and I just read an article just the other day that now is up the figures. They're now saying that 80% of all cancer is directly related to lifestyle. 80%. One out of every two Americans dies of heart disease. Certainly what the masses are doing in terms of how they're eating and how they're thinking and how they're approaching health does not work. And those are just the top two diseases. 4,000 people dying a day of those two diseases alone. Just imagine that. When you were growing up, did people tell you, what is it, social proof that everybody smoked cigarettes to be cool? You know now how stupid it is. But back then, you did what the crowd did. Or did you? Maybe you were unique. Maybe that's why you and I are listening to this tape together. Maybe we've always been this way. Or maybe you drank. Or back in the 60s when everybody did drugs. The psychology of the crowd is one of fear. It's a group of people who are running around trying to find some way to get out of pain. They want a simple solution. Something that may not even be the real solution. They're looking for the source of the pain, and they want to eliminate it. They're looking for somebody to blame. They're looking for an enemy to distract themselves from the fact that they don't have control of their own lives. And you don't ever want to get swept up in it. But it's so hard not to. Why? Because we're inundated with this information. It's everywhere you turn. It's on the radio. It's in the newspaper. People are talking about it constantly. It's on your television set. Unless you're conscious, unless you say, I must guard my mind, this kind of information that can do nothing but destabilize you, make you uncertain, potentially create a sense of foreboding or fear, is going to be a part of your life. And you know what? If you manage to keep all the information out and you keep yourself in a good state, people around you, the crowd, wants to push you into their way of thinking. It's like when they see somebody is thinking in a different way or a unique way, there must be something wrong with them. Like they must be eradicated. We've seen this all the time. Human beings seem to have this upset with people that are different. I guess some people are afraid that if somebody else is different and they're happy, that maybe that makes them question whether or not they're doing the right thing in their lives. We don't want to allow that to happen to us. I know when I was growing up, I was always so different. I remember a few years back when I was going back to my high school reunion. And on my way going up there, I literally regressed back to high school. I felt like emotionally like I was back then, with a lack of confidence like I'd not had in years. And I was feeling kind of down, almost to the level of depressed. And I thought, this is ridiculous. What's going on with me? I began to realize it. So as I was driving up there, I decided to call my mom up on the phone. And I said, hey, Mom, I said, I'm going up for my 10-year high school reunion. And she said, oh, my gosh, I can't even believe it. And she said, boy, does time fly. And she must have sensed something in my voice, and she said, honey, she said, I don't know what you're thinking about. She said, but I know one thing's for sure. You were very different back then. You were different than the rest of people. You weren't accepted by them all. She said, but look what being different has gotten you in your life. And I thought, wow, Mom sure had the right advice. Next time you got a problem, call Mom. I mean, that was brilliant input. Brilliant. I started looking around saying, look at my life now. Now I can't walk down the street anywhere in this nation without getting a chance to meet friends, people maybe I've never even met before, but have listened to my books or tapes and have gotten great value for their life. I mean, I get this unbelievable reinforcement all because I was different. So I can tell you, if you look at these people, whether it be a Robert Prechter or whether it be a Paul Pilser or whether it be a Peter Goober, these people are different. They're not like everybody else you're going to meet. That's why they're successful. Your goal should be to be different. Now, not just to be a rebel, that is to try and do the opposite of everybody else just because you think by being opposite you'll be more successful or more unique. That's not it. Be yourself. Don't be what the crowd wants you to be. Don't bend just because everyone else around you wants to remake you in their mold. Realize that if you have a vision, that vision needs to be brought to reality, and you're the source. And that vision will only be brought to reality if you can continually focus on solution and not problem. Continually focus on the value you plan on adding versus all the fear and the challenge and distortion that will be surrounding you. Remember, what the majority is doing is not necessarily the most effective. You know, even Thomas Jefferson talked about the tyranny of the majority. That we have to be very careful. Just because the majority of people think something or believe something does not mean it is best. Some people say, well, I don't go with the crowd. I'm much smarter than that. I only do what experts tell me to do. Experts often think the same. They're often educated in the same way through some of the same systems. So of course they're going to come up with the same answer, the same results. We need to look at the people that are breaking the rules and getting results to know what's possible. So you'll never know what's possible until you attempt the impossible. You'll never know what you're capable of until you commit yourself to becoming more. But you can't do that based on the environment, on the social proof. You've got to do it based upon your imagination. Remember, imagination is more powerful than intellect. It's in our imagination, in our view of what's possible, that we create the possible. How many drugs can you think of? The miracle drugs that everybody promoted to us. Doctors got you to take them because they were taught to. They were taught that this drug was safe. Experts told them this was the best drug for the job. And yet now, years later, how many of these drugs, how many of these vaccines now are in the middle of lawsuits? Because thousands of people have found that the drugs themselves are creating disease in their body. Or that cancer is now there as a result. Look at those things that we've accepted. One of the most common drugs given to mothers, pregnant mothers, was Benedictin, designed to take care of the morning sickness. And yet the reality is children started turning up with physical abnormalities. Women started developing all kinds of physical challenges. And all of a sudden, after years of saying this was the ideal drug, it was pulled back. We cannot trust because an expert has told us something that it is right. We've got to make sure we do our best to do our own research to see if something makes sense to us, to see what the upside or downside is, to get more information rather than just knowing that because everybody else is doing it, it must be okay. This doesn't mean the expert is trying to mislead you or that they're not educated. It just means the more important your decision is, the more educated you should be, the more information you have to be able to make conscious decisions for yourself. This is critical. And by the way, this means any kind of expertise. If I tell you something, you need to say, does this make sense to me? Does this jive with the information I have? Can I use this? And let me see what kind of results I get from it. Judge by that. You've got to study what makes sense to you. Don't just go with the flow. There's a huge price for going with the flow, and the price is pain. The most dramatic examples that we could probably list are those of somebody like a Jim Jones. Think about it. How did this man manage to get people to come up and murder themselves, commit suicide, and help their children to die by drinking Kool-Aid that was laced with poison? They knew what they were doing. How did they do it? He took them out of their normal environment. He took them down to Guyana, where there was no one to study or to notice how to respond except each other. And they were uncertain in a jungle they didn't know how to deal with. And they had a very dominant leader who was telling them what to think and how to think and what to do. And you know what? He influenced them. All he needed to do was get a few of his most intense followers to come forward first and drink the cups of Kool-Aid and to show them giving up their children. When others saw enough of them do it, they fell right in line. And to all but a very few who escaped, willfully, purposely, consciously killed themselves. This has got to be one of the most devastating examples, but unfortunately, it's not the only one. Throughout human history, when people are not sure what to do, they look to somebody who seems to be certain, but because they're certain doesn't mean they're right. People can be certain and be wrong. They can be sincerely wrong. You don't want to get hooked. You want to make sure you're educated. Again, remember the criteria is the more important a decision is, the greater the potential consequences, the more you must consciously know and understand, the more information you need to make intelligent decisions that can shape your life for the positive. See, we got to remember again and again that information by itself has power, but only at the level we direct it. Remember the formula, information times focus equals personal reality. There's lots of great information out there, but if you don't get access to it, or if you have access to information, but you don't focus on how to use it on a daily basis, then you don't have any power. You don't have any ability to create change. And throughout history, people have gotten false information or a limited amount of information that has cost whole societies. When enough people, when a critical mass of people know about some information, our world changes. But we've got to make sure that we constantly pursue the best information we can receive. So again, I times F equals personal reality. Information times focus equals personal reality. And we all want to have an experience of a greater reality. So how do we do that? We become more sensitive about the sources of information that we currently have, how we pursue new information, and what we focus on. The information we have and the information we focus upon determines how we think, how we feel, and what we do. Information shapes our destiny. So there are five information challenges that could show up in your life. And let me just point them out to you so you can become sensitive to them and you don't fall into the trap that I think so many of us have fallen in the past. Number one, remember, information is worthless without a purpose. See, there's all kinds of information around you all the time, but if you don't have a reason to use it, you won't even notice it. There's a part of our brain called the reticular activating system. The RAS, as it's described by experts, and it's a lot easier to say. That part of your brain, the RAS, is constantly determining what information that you're receiving from the world is significant enough for you to notice and to evaluate. In other words, right now while you're listening to my voice, you might be in your car. How many things could you be noticing inside the car, inside your body? Your heart beating really fast, the blood rushing from one section to another, certain pressure on different parts of your body. You could also be noticing things outside, like the person in front of you, which I hope a part of you is paying attention to right now. If you're at home, you could be looking at different things. You could be hearing different things. You could be smelling different things. There's so much information available. But your RAS, your reticular activating system, determines what is significant enough for you to evaluate. If suddenly in your car someone started coming from the other side of the road over, your brain says that's significant and you'd have to figure a way to respond quickly. The problem is if your RAS isn't sensitized to notice certain things, it just goes by because your brain can only focus on so many things consciously at a time. Whenever you make it clear to your brain that something is important, it's significant, it has a purpose in your life, then you start noticing it everywhere. A classic example that I've given so many times is when you suddenly buy a new car or you buy a new outfit, and then all of a sudden what happens? Everywhere you turn, you see this car all of a sudden. Everywhere you turn, you see an outfit like this outfit. What's happened? Those cars were always around you. Those outfits were always around you. But by letting your brain know this is significant, now anytime that information is nearby, your brain becomes consciously aware of it. That's what happens when you set a goal. When you tell your brain, this is what's really important to me, you start noticing anything that can get you to that goal more quickly. Well, the whole key here then is to know what your purpose is when you're studying, when you're pursuing information. If you know why information is important to you, then suddenly little things that didn't matter will show up. Little ideas, little distinctions, and one simple idea could change your whole life. So if we want to maximize our ability to utilize information to expand the quality of our lives, we've got to constantly know what the purpose of our life is, what the purpose of a conversation is. What do you want to accomplish in your business, in your life, in your relationships? If you get real clear about what you value most, about what your goals are, suddenly information you weren't noticing at all, information that could immediately empower you, just jumps out at you. That's how I read books. When I go into a book, I ask myself, what do I want from this book? What is this book about? What are the potential answers from this book? What's my purpose in reading it? And I screen through it, and ideas jump out at me, and then I'm able to use those and share them with other people. So remember, you're not going to use your information unless you're clear on your purpose. Information without a purpose is worthless. Get clear on the purposes of your life physically, emotionally, socially, spiritually, in relationships, in finance, in business. Know what's most important. The information will show up. The second challenge that we experience in an information age is that with all the information around you, you could still have an information deficit. That is, you could be in a situation where you don't know enough. Now, a lot of people are so frustrated with the massive amount of information that comes across their desk or into their mailbox or into their life that they've given up. A lot of people have rationalized it by saying, you know, ignorance is bliss. Ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance is pain. Ignorance is poverty. Ignorance means frustration. I don't care whether it be in the financial world or in the relationship world or in the parenting world or in business. What you don't know will hurt you. You've got to make sure that you get the information you need in order to be effective. It's not enough just to be confident. You got to be competent. And that means having a strategic plan on how to get a hold of any information you might need to be effective in a given situation. Just this one piece of information could totally increase the quality of your life. The lack of one piece of information could cost you a lot. I know in my businesses, having 9 companies with all the people that we have involved, I've had times where 1 or 2 decisions by an individual who wasn't completely informed have cost us tens of thousands, in some cases hundreds of thousands of dollars. We've got to make sure that when we go into something that is important, that is significant, that we make certain that we have all the primary information we need to make intelligent decisions. And by the way, this information deficit can show up in a way that screws up personal relationships. Have you ever found yourself like forming an opinion or maybe even getting mad about something and then later on you find out you didn't even have all the information and you felt stupid about it? You felt bad about getting upset in the first place? I know I've done it. The bottom line is you're operating out of an information deficit. Sometimes it's not a deficit of information, but a deficit of quality information or a deficit of relevant information. Sometimes we've got so much information we don't know what to do. Once again, the more clear you are about what you're trying to accomplish, what your purpose or what your goal is, the better you can define what information you need. And don't assume you have all the information you need because you've done something successfully in the past. We're living in a time where change is happening so rapidly. The strategy used in the past may not work today. Make sure you're up to date. And, of course, the best way to do this, the best way to make sure you don't have an information deficit, is find someone who's getting the results you want. Sit down with them. Tell them what you know and ask them what you don't know that you need to know. If I'm going to go take a trip and I'm going to go down some river and I know that there are rocky rapids along the way, I want to take an experienced person with me to point the way, or I at least want to get them to draw me a map. See, to have them tell me, hey, you've been through this before. What is it I don't know that if I knew, my trip would be a lot smoother and I could probably get there quicker or I could enjoy the ride a lot more? Third major challenge with information I call information pollution. What I mean by that is, well, let me give you a classic example. A few weeks ago, I don't know if you heard on the news or read it in the paper, but in several different newspapers and magazines, there was this article about how this new study had been done that said, hooray, guess what? Eating chocolate can actually reduce cavities. And by the way, this was not in the National Enquirer. And people were like getting excited about the possibility of it. Well, a few days later in the Wall Street Journal, they came out and described who had sponsored the study. It was one of the largest chocolate manufacturers in our country. See, the bottom line is that company said, oh, they weren't just trying to support the organization and the study. They weren't trying to influence it. But it's not too hard to figure out that there might be a little influence there. So information pollution, by my definition, it occurs anytime someone is giving you information that clearly have secondary gain. If you've got a limited amount of information or information that's slanted or inaccurate, you got to remember that it's still going to shape your reality. You're still going to make decisions based upon the information you have as long as you think it's accurate. Make sure you don't allow yourself to be polluted. It's the same conversation when it comes to our health. You know, right now there are all these articles coming out about the drug DES. But here's a drug that was administered for 20 years. And now there are women that are infertile because of it. And they're suing like crazy. But you know, suing doesn't get back somebody's body parts. It doesn't get back their future. It doesn't get back the ability to have a child. And you know what? As early as 1955, some of these companies knew that the drug was ineffective. Think about it. If someone tells you something, make sure you ask yourself the question, do they have a potential secondary gain? That doesn't mean they're trying to mislead you, but do you think their own need could color the way they're describing things, even in their own mind? You don't have to put yourself in a state of distrusting. You just have to ask yourself, could their own needs, their own desires, either to make a difference or to produce a quality product or to profit, could it be polluting their view and therefore polluting mine? What's another source of information? Again, the key to all of this is whenever the decision you're going to make is critical, it's going to affect your health, your relationship, your business, you probably want to work hard to make sure you have no polluted information. Anytime you're going to make decisions about how to feel about a friend, somebody tells you, hey, this person here is treating people really harshly. Don't just buy into it. It might be an opinion. It might be a distortion. It might be a generalization. It might be information pollution that's going to affect the way you think about this person in the future. Stop and ask yourself, is there some other explanation? Where could I get more information? Again, remember, somebody who may be giving the information may have totally positive intent, but they may not know what they're talking about. They may be sincere and yet be sincerely wrong. And there are those, as they talk about in government, who put out what they call disinformation campaigns. Those people out there who are deliberately trying to give you information that's not accurate so that you'll shape your decisions in a way that benefits them. Remember, the cheapest commodity on earth is advice. You can get it from anybody. So make sure if you're going to get advice, get it from somebody who's producing results, somebody who's already getting the results that you want. They're the ones who can tell you what works and doesn't. Don't go to somebody who's never built a business and have them tell you what's a good business to be in or not. Recently, I was reading an article in one of our nation's newspapers, and the article was very, very critical of business people in our culture, specifically some Fortune 500 CEOs and how they're just not doing the job, and that's why these companies are having to lay people off. Well, you know, it's really easy to criticize. It's very interesting to see if those same people that are writing these articles might get out there and try to do it themselves. They might find it's a little easier for them to criticize than to actually produce the result they're talking about. I've even seen some articles where some business deans were criticizing some CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. You know, you look at these business deans' backgrounds, and in two of the three cases, they've never even been involved in any business in their lifetime, much less if they ever run a billion-dollar business like the ones that they were criticizing. See, you got to be careful. Once you know your purpose, once you know a result you want to produce, go to people that are currently producing results, the results you're after. If you know your purpose, they can help guide you. They can let you know, do you have an information deficit? What else do you need to know? They can help you to know, hey, what you've heard about this is garbage. I've done it. I can tell you. The fourth challenge with information is obvious. Information overload. being in this information age, we've got to learn to break through and find out what information is really relevant to what we want personally. Otherwise, you find yourself getting caught up, not able to make a decision, because as soon as you get one piece of information, you get some contradictory information. You've got to finally say two things. One, what is the best source of my information? Two, what information do I specifically need to get a hold of? And three, what's the timeline for this? I could gather information for the rest of my life. There's a timeline where I'll have to have gathered enough information that I've got to make a decision. And when that timeline comes, make your decision. And finally, five, remember, with information, whatever you feed on consistently will shape your life. See, if you constantly feed yourself with information about how terrible the economy is, you're going to feel overwhelmed. If you constantly feed yourself with examples, stories, people you seek out who are doing well at any time, then pretty soon you're going to start to feel that same sense of certainty that will empower you to find a way to take your business, your career, your personal life, your relationship to the next level. So there is a common theme here with all these. After you know your purpose, the common theme is finding someone who's produced a result, finding a role model. I've taught this for years, and it's helped shape my life. The bottom line is, it's never the environment. It's never the economy. It's never your potential. You've got all you need. All you need to do is feed your mind. You've got to seek out those role models, those people that have done it. You can give you the quality information that can both inspire you and instruct you to take your life to the next level, where you know that the human spirit is stronger than the environment, where you remember what you know inside about your capability, and you make that capability into reality. So what's the essence of the entire talk today, this entire conversation you and I are having? It's to remember, anything that you can dream, conceive, believe, act upon, and learn from, you can bring into reality, regardless of the environment. And while the current emotional season may feel like a deep winter to you, I want you to remember there are those who've learned to enjoy and even prosper in this season, right now, these supposedly challenging times. And two, it's good to remember that throughout human history, men and women have come up against much tougher situations than we're currently experiencing. Right now, we're going through changes in our economy. Companies are becoming more efficient. People are being laid off. It looks like a very scary thing. How many times have we gone through it before? It's an economy that is breathing. It's been blowing out and exhaling for a long time. Now it's inhaling. Chance for you to take a look at how you want to position yourself over the coming years. But if you allow yourself to get caught up in the mental trap, in the psychology of the crowd, then you get to live in fear. And not only do you get to live in fear, but you get to let your life show up like everybody else's life. And I would submit to you that most people in our culture are not living their dream. They're not experiencing the joy or happiness that they deserve. They aren't making the difference or contributing at the level that they really want, or they're doing it, but they're not feeling the joy that comes with it. You don't want to be one of those. Step aside. Stand guard at the door of your mind. Remember, whatever you allow to penetrate it will begin to affect your life, positively or negatively. So you decide what enters in, you alone, because otherwise you'll find yourself in an environment like the masses, where pretty soon you'll be taught to give up, that nothing can change anyway, that the problems are permanent, that they're pervasive. And once we start to believe that, we go into learned helplessness and we don't even try anymore. You got to remember that spring always follows winter, and the day always follows the night. This too shall pass. And you also have to remember, every belief you adopt has a consequence. And buying into limitations, seeing current challenges as permanent challenges, challenges that are pervasive, will virtually guarantee you an experience of learned helplessness where you'll not only fail to tap your potential, but you'll even lose your desire to try. We've got to turn our focus away from rehashing the problems and into creating viable solutions. It's only through a solutions focus that we can create the changes we desire. Focusing on what we don't want only causes us to drive into the very walls we're trying to avoid. So beware. You're in the midst of a war, a battle between the limits of a crowd seeking the surrender of your dreams and the power of your true vision. It's a fight between those who will tell you what you cannot do and that source inside of you that knows and has always known that man is more than his environment, and that a dream backed up by an unrelenting will to attain it is truly a reality with an imminent bearing. So in the coming weeks, as you inevitably hear the rumblings of the crowd promoting all the gloom and doom, whether it's about the economy or the future or your dreams, remember the importance of standing guard at the magical door of your mind. Decide today on a plan to consistently feed your mind with quality information that can assist you in making intelligent decisions outside the realm of fear. Seek out and surround yourself with people who are producing results rather than making excuses. Your association with them will profoundly shape your destiny. Stand guard at the door of your mind. Feed and nourish your soul. Take massive action, trust your instincts, and live your dream. If you do, then I get the privilege of welcoming you to that select fellowship of achievers who direct their minds and their lives and lead by example.